There's something about fossils, I think, that can transport you in a way to a different place in time. So much history, of course, lies in, and sometimes it's just a single bone or maybe a shell. And the discoveries that have been made based from those are actually pretty amazing. We've learned about dinosaurs, humans, and now there have been new discoveries on the first animals on land, and that's what we're going to be talking about today with Chris Gass. Chris is a researcher, author, living in Wisconsin Rapids. His latest book, Solving the Mystery of the First Animals on Land, The Fossils of Blackberry Hill, was published in July by Surrey Scientific Press, covers a major fossil discovery found right here in Wisconsin. And as we visit with him, I hope you'll join in. What experiences have you had with fossils? Have you ever found any? Do you know about Blackberry Hill? We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Could email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Miller Show Facebook page. You can post your questions or your comments there. And Chris Gass, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Oh, hi, Larry. Thank you very much for having me on.
You know, I was looking at your book, if people of a certain age will remember a Fats Domino song, which is "I Found My Thrill on Blueberry Hill," I think is the opening line. And we don't have Blueberry Hill, but we've got Blackberry Hill.
I think at some point that crosses everybody's mind when they're talking about Blackberry Hill. It's a very, very exciting place. A little bit different from the song, but it's very intriguing and something you won't find every day.
Yeah, give us some background on Blackberry Hill.
Well, it's a place that solves a mystery that went all the way back to the days of Charles Darwin. Ever since 1847, in 1847, the mystery actually started in Quebec, some trackways were found. Some footprints with some other markings going down the middle were found in Quebec that were published first in a newspaper, and then they were interpreted as being tortoise footprints and tortoise trackways. But then soon after that announcement was made, it caught the attention of the geologist over in Canada, who said these are actually not from, they were thinking that they were from the Devonian period, which was a big discovery because that would have pushed reptiles back way, way far earlier than they had thought that they ever lived. But what happened was that was Robert Abraham, that was the person who first put that in the newspaper. What happened was Sir William Logan of the Geological Survey of Canada was the one. So they actually went back to the Cambrian period, which is way before that. This is even more significant. They still thought they were tortoise footprints, but to make a long story short and kind of come up to date with Blackberry Hill, many years later, over 150 years later, in about 2002, 2003, some animals were found in Wisconsin that were the very first animals, when they were right in Blackberry Hill, that actually were responsible for having made these trackways. So the mystery started in 1847. What were the animals? The trackways were found. They were found all over Canada, some different parts of Canada, New York, Wisconsin, Missouri. But the animals hadn't been found until Blackberry Hill, Wisconsin, where the animals themselves turned up. Only three specimens, and it was just as what Owen had predicted. Owen was shown these fossils back then, way back in 1851. He proposed that after looking at more fossils, they actually weren't tortoises. They were some kind of extinct arthropod, and that was 1852. So, again, I'm kind of zigzagging here, but...
Yeah, he's a smart guy.
What happened was Owen was a very big, big name back then. And he brought this to the attention of everybody at the Geological Society of London, who all had their own theories. And, of course, that was the hotbed of geology. That was pretty much the birthplace of modern geology. They came up with the geologic time scale, and Darwin, of course, was a member of it. In fact, he was the secretary of it for a couple of years. And nobody really could agree exactly what it was, but pretty much everybody thought Yes, Owen is right. It was some kind of an arthropod. And as it turns out, 150 years later, Wisconsin proved Owen was right. It was an extinct group of arthropods, which of course includes all the arthropods, of course, include the insects, crustaceans, spiders, scorpions, those kinds of things. But this was not any of those types. It was a different kind. And that's pretty much the gist of Blackberry Hill, with the exception of the other spectacular fossils that are found there as well, because many, many other new discoveries were found there at Blackberry Hill besides just the first animals. But the first animals to walk on land was the mystery solved. That was pretty much the biggest thing. And very few people really hear about that. I'm sure most of your listeners have never heard of that, had never even been aware of the mystery, let alone what was the first animal on land. But it was a very, very big discovery, of course.
Well, your book, which is quite interesting, is you've got some the photography in this is really something of the, I mean, the book is full of photos of different, I don't know what you'd call.
If I can just back up a little bit.
Go ahead.
What they are, the two different main types of fossils, of course, if you go back to your school, the definition of fossil is the remains or traces of prehistoric life. And most people think about, when they think about fossils, they think about the remains, the bones, the shells, and
right.
The other parts that are left behind of the body itself. Most of the trackways and other fossils at Blackberry Hill are actually the other kind of fossil. They're the traces. They are the footprints, the trackways, the burrows, the borings, other, you know, whole variety of markings and various activities, evidence of the activities of the animals rather than their parts of their bodies. And so, but because of the fact that there were so many of these, and also there's something else that was found there that happened before the animals were found that made these footprints, and that was jellyfish. And of course, mm-hmm. jellyfish are virtually impossible to preserve. I mean, they're very, very rare to preserve. They're almost 100% water. They're very soft, no hard parts whatsoever, nothing that normally gets preserved, no shell material, nothing like that. But here they were by the thousands at Blackberry Hill, preserved on certain layers that preserved them just beautifully. The same way you'd find stranded jellyfish washed up on beaches, which sort of pulsate in the sand. They draw sand into their bodies. And they pump water away, and you can see sort of like a little moat going around the bodies. The exact same, and then, of course, if the waves would wash the animal back into the water, you'd have this little impression in the sand where the jellyfish used to be. And I've seen many of those. I'm sure most of your listeners have seen those at some point if they've been in one of the oceans. And this is exactly the kind of thing that you find. Only the sand, of course, is turned into sandstone. And actually quartzite, orthoquartzite, which is metamorphosed sandstone. So this was a good clue that there may be with something that preserves those fossils so well and preserves the trace fossils so well, the traces of these animals, these trackways, might one day produce the animals themselves. And again, that's exactly what happened at Blackberry Hill. They finally did turn up, and lo and behold, it answered the question, solved the mystery. Pretty much, though, because there was one other thing that was still missing at first. Yes, there were three fossils. I happened to find one of them myself, but mm-hmm. There were three fossils that were found, but there was no real direct proof, no direct association of those animals with the traces. So, in other words, you have a trackway in the same place at the same time as these animals, these body fossils, but who's to really say that that body didn't maybe wash up on the beach? Because these are all beach deposits, intertidal mm-hmm. deposits between high and low tide. And, you know, things like that, there was, if it had something like the animal laying dead at the end of its tracks or caught in the act of making the tracks, then that would be some kind of a direct, you know, smoking gun, basically. Well, that's exactly what did turn up at Blackberry Hill. In fact, it was on a personal level. I took my son, one of my sons there named Todd, and he said, "Dad, I think you're going to like this." And he pointed me to a fossil. And this fossil was it. It was the smoking gun we were looking for. Very serendipitously, but it was clear. And I like to call it the Rosetta Stone of Blackberry Hill. because that's exactly what it is. It solves a mystery that would never have otherwise been solved. It put the pieces together, pretty much. So I immediately, you know, after I found that, I started showing these fossils to people, to James Hagedorn, who was doing research on this and who had written most of the papers. There was quite a bit of research done on this by that time. I wasn't the first one there by any means. I mean, this was done since about 2000. I didn't get there 2006. And two of the body fossils were found by that time. But so we started. I started a paper with Joe Collette, another researcher who was a grad student of James Hagedorn and James himself. And we did some experiments. Joe Collette and I went out. We basically played in the sandbox at the University of California in Riverside. And we did experiments. We said, okay, if we took a model that we made of the tail end of this animal that we found, and we said, let's see if we can duplicate these trackways.
And at that point in the mystery, we're going to take a quick break. So, Chris, you hang in there. We'll take a quick break for news, and then we'll be back with our guests. Stay with us. Well, I don't think many people know about a place located in Wisconsin called Blackberry Hill, but if you do know about it, you'll know that there were some fossil discoveries made there, many of them, and the magic of those fossils, I think, is and the mysteries, probably still mysteries to be solved and found there. Glad you could join us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. My guest today, Chris Gass, is a researcher, author living in Wisconsin Rapids. His latest book is Solving the Mystery of the First Animals on Land, The Fossils of Blackberry Hill. It's published in July by Siri Scientific Press. Covers a major fossil discovery found right here in Wisconsin. And again, Chris, glad you could join us today.
Thanks again. If I could just pick up on where I left off.
Yeah.
I just wanted to kind of close that little loop there. We were in the middle of talking about the experiment that Joe Collette and I did for our paper, and we eventually published it in the Journal of Paleontology. And it successfully, we were so surprised how easy it was to duplicate those trackways using the model of the animal that we suspected to be the maker of it. It just, you know, there was one characteristic about this fossil that was very unusual, and that was, if it was the tail, let me just go back a little bit. There's one variety of this animal, of this trackway, rather, called Protycnides aramida. I don't want to go too much into names here. I'm trying to avoid that. But one variety that has like an offset kind of medial impression. I think I told you there's a drag mark going down the middle between two rows of footprints. So the drag mark down the middle is normally, you know, kind of parallel with the rows of footprints, as you'd expect, you know, from something dragging on the ground when the animal is walking. But in this case here, the drag mark was, or touch mark, whichever, was broken. And each of the elongated pieces that were broken were offset from each other. They were shingled. They were basically, looked kind of like shingles on a roof. And that really couldn't be explained. And this really had attracted the attention of Dolph Zeilacher, who was the biggest name in paleontology, pretty much. And he was the father of trace fossils, pretty much. He gave most of the terminology for trace fossils and the whole thing. But this really caught his attention. He worked over at Yale and also the University of Tübingen in Germany. He came out and he said, this is really intriguing. He said, he couldn't explain that offset impression any other way than to think that, and also the segments on each of those impressions, which were, you know, thought to, you know, presumably were made by the tail, which had segments, those segments themselves were set at an angle on each of those impressions. And that was very odd. You know, first of all, they couldn't think of any animal that held its tail to the side all the time. Mm-hmm. And it was always to the same side. It was always to the left side. But also, they couldn't figure out why the segments themselves were tilted, because that never happens anywhere else in the animal kingdom. No arthropods or any other kind of, well, I wouldn't say no other kind of animal, but no arthropods has anything like that. The segments are, you know, perpendicular to the length of the body, you know, body axis. So in this case, the only explanation that he and James Hagedorn, who wrote a paper on that, could think of was a snail. A snail a snail has a right-handed tendency. They have sinistral and dextral shells. And if held a certain way, without getting into too technical, you can see that they're all, most living snails, and even fossil snails, are dextral. That means they're to the right. The angle is to the right when held a certain way. And so if this animal, when it was first coming out of the water, was holding a shell, a snail shell, and the snail shell was dextral, as most are and were, then this would be, and if it was holding its tail the opposite way from what hermit crabs do, because hermit crabs' bodies turn down, if it was like more like a scorpion that held its tail up, and it would therefore hold the shell basically upside down, then the impression that it would make in the sand, in the substrate, would be off to the left. And so this fit perfectly with that. It also explained the tilted, quote-unquote, segments, which are actually just impressions of the coils of the shell. So it just seems so perfect, almost maybe a little bit too perfect, but some people, you know, were a little bit skeptical about it, but it seemed to make perfect sense. There was also a strange marking on Protechnides aramida, on that special kind of trackway. Protechnides, by the way, means first footprints, and that's exactly what they were. To this day, they're still considered to be that. And so what that was a little, there was a little marking next to that main impression going down the middle, and they couldn't figure out what that was, except for they thought, okay, well, if it was a snail, that might have just been the flared lip of the shell opening that was contacting the sediment, and that's what was making that. So really everything that they saw, all the peculiarities of the tracks, these trackways, seemed to indicate that it was hermit behavior. So they called the Protechnides aramida. Aramida means hermit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's exactly where they came with it. They got that far. That was that was a few years before they published any of the animals.
This is really interesting. It's difficult sometimes to follow all of the vagaries of this, but I'm wondering why, what as you're talking here, what's coming to my mind is why this place? This place, Blackberry Hill, is kind of in central, near Wisconsin Rapids, within, I don't know, 30, 40 miles, I guess, of Wisconsin Rapids, in the central part of the state. And some of our callers are wondering, why this place? What are the conditions that led to this tracking?
So that I can give it a stab here. There, it's not exactly known. Nobody was around. Of course, there are no human witnesses back in the Cambrian period.
Obviously, yeah.
However, there were some special things that were happening at that place and in some other places, this, including the place in Quebec where they found the original Protechnides, and New York and Missouri and a couple of other places. There, it's microbial mats. The microbial mats had covered large parts of the oceans in the Precambrian times, very, very large parts. It was one of the first types of life on Earth, in fact, and they were covering the bottoms of the seas, especially near the shores, and there was nothing to really disturb them because most of the life back then in the Precambrian didn't move, and it didn't really, you know, disturb them. Then the Cambrian period, these microbial mats, which are mainly viruses and what they used to call blue-green algae, but now they're more calling cyanobacteria, bacteria rather than cyanobacteria. They were basically torn up by the life that came around in the Cambrian period. Remember, you've heard of the Cambrian explosion, all the trilobites and all these other things that moved around a lot, and they tore up, ate, dug through, and pretty much destroyed these wonderful, mass, you know, extensive microbial materials in the oceans. But there were some microbial materials that were going out onto the shores as well, probably for a couple billion years. But that was untapped. There was nothing there to eat it until the Cambrian, when these animals started coming out of the water. That might have been what lured them out of the water, and it might have also been what helped to preserve them. Because we find in most of the best preserved fossils, they're associated with, or covered with, microbial mats. And that probably is what contributed, at least, to their exquisite preservation, where they could withstand rapid burial without being flattened or obliterated. There's just some great detail on some of these fossils. Some of it may have just been because of the fact that it was above the water and there was nothing there, you know, to level it. But we believe more than a coincidence that these microbial materials were associated with these fantastically preserved fossils that basically shouldn't have been preserved.
And your book itself, you've had many, 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 I don't even know how many, photos, it must be close to 100 photos, of the various markings that were left by these animals, I guess you could say, for a better term.
Yes. Well, they were animals. The microbial materials, of course, aren't animals. It's not in the animal kingdom. But the trackways were made by animals. I mentioned the animals that made these Protichnites. They also made a different trackway called Diplichnites, which is lacked the dragway, the drag mark going down between the footprints. But both of those, and I go into this in pretty much detail in the book, could have been made by the same, and probably were made by the same animal. In fact, we found quite a few fossils. I show one of them in the book, where Protichnites kind of becomes Diplichnites, and vice versa, where you can actually see it transforming from one to the other. And because a trace fossil, all it is just markings in the sediment, basically. And it's like I said, the behavior. And a person or any animal can make an infinite amount of varieties of traces in its lifetime, you know, for a multitude of reasons, which I also go into in the book. And so that's two of the main kinds that you'll find there. Probably Diplichnites is the second most, and Protichnites is the third most common of the fossils at Blackberry Hill, of the trace fossils. There's one, though, that's much more common than either of those, and that's called Climacticnites, and that one is the one that looks like motorcycle tracks on a beach. Mm-hmm. And they're everywhere in some places. You can see quite a few photographs in the book on that, including on the cover. And these have crossbar going down each side of these long trackways, and then, side rails, and then crossbars kind of connecting them, sort of like if you picture a ladder, and that's kind of what Climacticnites means, is ladder. If there was such a thing as a motorcycle back then, they would probably have named them after a motorcycle track, because it actually looks more like that. Just picture, it looks like people are just partying on the beach with their motorcycles, and the tracks are going crisscrossing, going over each other. And what those probably are, the animal of that has never been found yet, but the resting traces, the burrows, the trackways, and other things have been found of that. And there's enough information to speculate that it was probably some kind of a boneless, shellless, slug-like animal, possibly a mollusk, something like a slug, that was perhaps feeding on these microbial materials. They were coming out of the water for some reason, and that's probably a pretty good one.
Yeah.
Although there is no direct evidence of that. There are no fecal pellets or anything like that that would directly show that. And, of course, the animal itself hasn't been found. But then again, you get preservation of one type of fossil, either a trace fossil. Trace fossils form in one environment. Body fossils typically don't form in that same environment, and vice versa. They're sort of mutually exclusive.
But some of those tracks look really, those would have been a pretty large snails, I would think.
They would have been about a foot to 2 feet long, in some cases a little bit longer. They were gigantic, pretty much, for a slug. I can picture.
Yeah.
I know I've been down to California, and I've seen the California sea slugs. I did some experiments with them there, in fact. Didn't want to disturb them too much. Didn't want to traumatize them, so I didn't do too much of it. If you can picture, if you know what a California sea hare is or a black sea hare, that's probably about the size and shape. It's not exactly like a sea hare because we did experiments, and it actually can't make one that looks exactly like that. However, there are some snails that do make, basically, they make Climacticnites. They're smaller, but there were experiments that were done on that by Patrick Getty and James Hagedorn that did show that there are some snails that can make those same kind of trackways in the sand and experimentally. So we're thinking that way indirectly. We're saying they're probably a giant slug-like mollusk that made those things. So we talked about two animals that were the first animals to come out of the water. I didn't even tell you the name of the first one yet. It's called a euthycarcinoid. And it's a type of, like I said, a type of arthropod that's no longer alive today. And that's what made the Protichnites and at least some of the Protichnites and probably the Diplichnites. But these motorcycle tracks, Climacticnites, were made by something totally different. And both of those kind of animals were coming out of the water at the same time, associated with each other, sometimes on the same surfaces, right next to each other. And so those, you have to say that they both came out. Now, of course, snails, slugs, things like that don't have legs, so it's hard to say that they made footprints or that they walked, but they were some of the first animals to come out of the water and slime along or whatever they were doing as they were coming out.
It's amazing. You know, for those people who are wondering about where Blackberry Hill is, I mentioned earlier that it's kind of in the central part of the state, and it's also on private property, is it not?
Very good point to make, yeah. So I don't want people trying to flood out there because they'll probably be very disappointed. Of course, you'd have to get the permission from the property owners, and they're not likely to give it to too many people. In fact, it's almost an act of Congress just for even scientists to get in there. And it's for into some of the places. Other ones aren't quite as hard to get into, but it's you know, hazardous, tripping hazards, you know. The liability insurance is getting higher because some of these are active quarries and some of them are just private property. So it's hard to get there, but that's kind of one of the reasons why I wrote the book, actually, is so that people could actually see good pictures of these things and appreciate it that way without having to try to get there, because good luck, you're probably not going to make it. It's a beautiful place, though. It's the place that it's right between sort of Wausau and Stevens Point and Mosinee and that general area. There were some other places that were not quite as spectacular as these that were found in Wisconsin way back 100 years ago or so, where they did find quite a few of these. Not the animal fossils, but not the animals themselves, but the trackways. And that was like New Lisbon, more in the southwestern mm-hmm. part of the state. New Lisbon, Black River Falls. But they're not quite as spectacular as these.
These are really spectacular. And as I look at sort of the land around it, it looks like a lot of these rocks or plates are almost like broken up. Or was that done by, I mean, was that the way they were found, or did those get broken up?
That's from working, quarrying operation.
Okay.
And the ones that you see that are on the photographs there. So you'll notice I didn't say the word quarry in the book, and I intentionally didn't. I didn't want people thinking that, okay, now this makes it easier for us to find these places or whatever, because some of these places really don't want people going out there. But the owners of the property, by the way, though, have been very, very good to the scientific community. Very, very good to them, letting many of us in and doing the scientific work. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's just amazing that the stuff would not have been. In fact, there's one person also I have to mention. His name is Daniel Damrow. He's actually he's not a quarry owner or a property owner, but he's one of the people who kind of discovered some of these exposures and brought it to the attention of certain people, and that like Ellis Yokelson of the Smithsonian and Bob Dott from right there at UW.
Yeah.
He was involved very early on. He was one of the early people in the story. And so if it weren't for one of these dealers and collectors, this place may not have... Actually, the actual Blackberry Hill, other than one location, was found previously. But the other ones may not have shown up for years, you know, if it hadn't been for him. So we have to give him some of the credit. This is definitely... and he found many of the fossils, too, by the way.
Hmm.
This is a very good thing. And I just wanted to say, if I can just tell you kind of why I wrote the book, just to give you a couple of things. I really did to help bring the public up to date on what the first animals on land were, because even though the answer is now known, most of the popular media still tend to get it all wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Most popular media, and I'm not saying NPR or WPR, because I've never heard it talked about one way or another on there, but most popular sources, like a lot of nature magazines, science magazines, they say nothing was walking around until the Silurian or Devonian period. And if you remember looking at your geologic column, there are like a couple of periods later than that, you know, 100 million years or so later than the Cambrian. They say that the first animals on land were millipedes or amphibious fish or amphibians. And, of course, that's not the case. Those happened many, many years later, millions of years later. This one in particular called Tiktaalik has gotten a lot of press lately. And the author didn't really suggest these were the first animals on land, but the headlines and the newspaper stories had spun it to make it look like that was the first animal on land. He wasn't saying that. It was the first, possibly the first amphibian, the first vertebrate on land, but certainly not the first animal on land. And the same thing with people, the media talking about scorpions or millipedes being the first animal. A millipede fossil was found in the Silurian period, and it may have been the first fully terrestrial animal on land. But again, that's the Silurian. We're talking about the Cambrian, which goes back to 500 million years rather than like 300, 400 million years.
Yeah. Deneen in Pewaukee had a question for you. I don't know, we may have time for it. Deneen, hi.
Hello. How are you?
Great. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Well, I do have this book. I acquired this book about 2 weeks ago, and I've been reading it. It's a very nice, easy reader for me. There's only one question that I have, well, a number of them, but one of them is on undertracking of the Diplocnides. Does that kind of mean, Chris, that the scorpion or whatever little animal it was, that their feet were going underneath the ground and making a fossil?
Yeah, that's a good question. First of all, probably wasn't a scorpion. I didn't want to get into too many details about the morphology of the animal. But this animal didn't have pinchers around the mouth. It didn't have chelicera, so it couldn't have been a scorpion. Euthycarcinoids didn't have, they weren't chelicerates. They were mandibulate, which means they had a mandible.
Got about anyway, 30 seconds.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. So, yes, it's sort of like looking at a ski poles going deeper than the snow ski impressions would. That's kind of the thing. You can make both kinds from a skier.
Oh, so that's how it worked. All right. Well,
yeah.
We have some more questions from listeners, and there's a pretty cool Facebook photo from Owen. It's a mosasaur vertebra found in a gravel pit in western Minnesota. You might want to go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, and you can find Chris and take a look at it. And the listeners, anybody listening in as well, as I think is a really cool photo. And the book itself, it's again, I want to give the title, is Solving the Mystery of the First Animals on Land. And it's a story of Blackberry Hill, which is right kind of in central Wisconsin. And as Ken has taken many photos of the tracks that he's talking about and the fossils, and it makes for some wonderful designs. Oh my goodness, there are the art. It's kind of an art in a way, and certainly it's been sold that way. I'm sure many times, and I'm. Glad to have had a chance to talk with you. Thank you so much for being with us today, and I hope the book does well. Chris Gass, a researcher, author, lives in Wisconsin Rapids. The book, Solving the Mystery of the First Animals on Land, The Fossils of Blackberry Hill. And thank you all for listening.